Chapter 17. Bait and Switch. The wooden planks beneath his feet swayed slowly, rocking back and forth as the Frostwatch Symphony masqueraded across the Katamic in the guise of a merchant ship. A day earlier, the ship had been loaded with mind root, Keshi silks, and several casks of Summer and Sunset, one of the priciest Tikalish brandies gold could buy. Shortly before putting to sea, Longshoremen had hastily unloaded the mind root and silks. The brandy was kept aboard, in partial payment to the coin blades who had taken the place of the offloaded cargo. Zelasan sat in the hold with a dozen of his new compatriots, waiting for the ship to be attacked. Parjek Ranhalmar had hired 20 guards for his bait ship, counting on Captain Zane's informants in the trade city to have already marked the Frostwatch Symphony as a target. If they reached Zane's hunting grounds before word of the exchange, the pirate would walk into a trap that he thought was his to spring.
"Ain't learn me to swim anyway. Why not wear mail, am I right?"
one of the other coin blades remarked, trying to break the grim mood with conversation. He was a scraggly man, all arm and leg, with an egg of a face and a week's unshaven scruff covering it. His posture suggested a military career to Zelasan, who knew the type all too well. Boring assignments, petty tyrants for commanders, and meager pay. Soon enough, any man good enough with a blade or bow starts wondering how much more coin he could pocket working for himself. A few even went through with it. "Me, I swim just fine," Zelasan replied after an awkward silence that no one else seemed inclined to break. "You'll see me strip into my skivvies fast enough if when I go into that water out there." He smiled, scanning the hold for signs of anyone with a sense of humor, or at least the bravery to show it. The men in the hold were the ones who would fight armored upon the deck once the ship was boarded. They were to hold the middle ground and keep Zane's pirates from gaining the helm, defending the ship's captain. Almost to a man, they had agreed to keep well away from the railings, lest they plummet to a near certain death in the Katamic, pulled under by the weight of the steel there.
"Open this thing up a little wider. I can't breathe in here,"
a bare-chested Feru complained, a note of rising panic and frustration in his voice. A sliver of bright daylight shone in through the wooden door, just enough to cast the inside of the crate into a stark contrast of light and dark that kept the eyes from fully adjusting to either. They were crowded inside with just a common bench to sit on and not enough room to stand. Sweating bodies rubbed uncomfortably together. Stowed weapons poked neighbors. The air was hot and more humid than the fresh air just outside. The door to the crate was disguised from the outside to look like any other side of the wooden box. It had leather hinges on the inside that let it swing wide open, and a rope handle to let the occupants pull it closed tightly to complete the disguise. Until pirates were sighted, they were leaving it open just a bit to get more air and alleviate the heat. The Feru coin blade reached out for the dark-skinned hand that kept custody of that handle. Before he could wrench that hand away from the door, another hand had a finger to the man's throat.
"Sit down," Rakashi commanded sternly. "There is air enough to breathe. The fear is in your mind. Do not shame yourself with cowardice just before a battle."
The Feru man grabbed for the finger at his throat, but the hand it belonged to shoved him roughly back toward his seat. In the cramped confines, he was not welcomed back gently.
"Who put you in charge here anyway?"
someone else asked snidely. Apparently the Feru man was not the only one growing impatient with the accommodations.
"I am not in charge. I am just following the orders given by the captain, the man who will tell Parjek Ranhalmar who gets paid and who does not. No man on this ship is strong enough to defy all these hired blades."
Rakashi spoke the truth carefully, for he rather suspected that there was a woman who could.
"Thus we will follow our orders. The door does not open more than to allow a fist through."
Glares met Rakashi's answer. Rightly or wrongly, they went unnoticed, lost to the glare from the taunting sunlight.
"I don't like having you up here, or on the ship at all, you know,"
Captain Rangelord groused, not so much as looking in the direction of the object of his ire. "You've mentioned it a time or two," Soria commented dryly, standing next to him by the ship's wheel. It was late afternoon, and with Frostwatch Symphony heading south, the sun was slowly beginning its descent to their starboard side. "But if the pirates attack with the sun at their backs, it will be any time now. This is the best view besides the nest." She had said much the same thing that morning, when she expected the attack would have come from the east with the rising sun. Tanner had won a contest that morning just after they set sail, and proved he had the best eyes of the bunch. That had earned him the honor of being the one to watch from up on high, in the crow's nest. Soria did not begrudge him his victory, but neither would she accept being stuffed in a box or stowed in the hold as the rest of them had. Instead, she watched and waited, giving vague license to the crew to go on about their work around her, without actually getting out of their way.
"If you weren't a woman, I'd..."
"End up feeding the sharks," Soria finished for him, but not in any way as the captain had intended. "There is a reason I commanded 3 times the sum of the others for this job. When this battle is won, you will see why."
"Tez you on, master, or mistress, I ought to say," the captain spat on the deck. "Sack of fish feet, that's what that's worth. Got folks scared of 'em, 'cause they can fight without a blade. Well, them pirates will have blades, and you'll see what's what. Not sure how you snookered a man like Paul Jack Ranhalamar, but you won't fool me."
"Listen here, root peddler," Soria warned. "You've got 6 of your crew that could likely captain us back to shore somewhere. If you have a problem with me, I don't mind settling it." Soria was not so foolish as to think that the mind root Parjek Ranhalamar and his associates offloaded would not be sold elsewhere. Trading in mind root was a high crime in almost any place with a functioning government. When inhaled, it was a potent and addictive hallucinogen, vile enough to warrant a universal disdain, though that was not the use that kings and governors feared. When ingested, it reacted with the stomach's fluids and killed horrifically in just moments. That was the sort of thing folk took a really strong stance against. Pirates, thieves, assassins, and, to a lesser extent, coinblades like herself, were all unsavory types that respectable folk kept away from. Poison sellers were a level of scum below even those, and Soria might have considered doing the world a service being rid of a few, had she not a more immediate need of them for transportation to a meeting with Denric Zane. The tiny speck on the horizon could have been anything. It might have been the peak of a mountain on some island he had yet to spot. It might have been a whale or a shark or some other sea creature breaching. Scale was impossible to judge due to the vast distance Tanner could see through the spyglass he had been given. From a wooden bucket built around the central mast of the ship, he had a splendid vantage, but no experience in spotting ships. The ship was staffed with a miser's crew, or some real sailor would have sat watch. It mattered little to Tanner's thinking, since the whole idea was to be found by Denric Zane, and not the other way around. He had taken the job just for the novelty. He had traveled many a time across the Katamic without ever having so good a view. The motion of the ship made it difficult to keep the long, tubular contraption of aligned lenses pointed where he wanted to look. It was Tanner's first time using a spyglass as well, since he was a mere passenger on all his previous voyages, and there was little call for the things on land. Fiddling with the lenses to keep his vision from blurring vexed him. Had he any real talent for magic, he would have used that instead of the troublesome device.
"Ship!"
he called down to the captain, when finally he was able to discern white sails against the pale blue of the horizon sky.
"Way, way off, in front and left of us, that way."
He pointed when the captain looked up. It was hardly the most nautical of exchanges, but Tanner got the necessary information relayed. Captain Rangelord took up his own glass and confirmed the sighting as they drew close enough to see it from the quarterdeck. It was too far to tell much about it, but it appeared that it was heading west. Across the course, the Frostwatch Symphony was following. It was also far enough to the port side that it would pass quite close to them. The captain took the wheel and turned it gently to steer them just a bit eastward of their previous heading. It was a common enough maneuver on the open seas, if one captain had no wish to parley with another, to veer past behind another ship instead of meeting it. Captain Rangelord returned to his spyglass and watched. Most ships would think nothing of their change in course. A Navy ship might investigate, had they any reason to suspect smugglers or pirates. A troubled ship or one bearing a message might have enough need of parley to turn to intercept. And, of course, there were pirates. Pirates most certainly would not let such an opportunity slip away just behind them. Through a trick of the eye or a calming wind, the vessel in the distance seemed to slow. Captain Rangelord saw no change in their sails. As they drew closer, he recognized the ship's profile in the water and the cut of its sails, and knew it for an Acardian vessel. It was a frigate, but an older design than the fair trader that Zane sailed.
"Rot it," the captain swore softly.
One way or another, if that ship tried to board them, be they Acardian sailors or pirates, their only option was to repel the boarders and take their ship. There was no way the Acardians would tolerate a ship such as the Frostwatch Symphony trolling the waters with a hold full of coin blades, looking for ships to plunder, pirate or no. When the second vessel deemed the time right, they swung around and openly made straight for the Symphony. Captain Rangelord spun the wheel hard, taking evasive actions. As prepared as his mercenaries were for being caught, the trap would not be so convincing if they gave up without resistance. Breaking her silence as she stood watching the vessel approach from the forward railing of the quarterdeck, Soria called over to the captain.
"They are dropping their colors and raising the blacks."
Rangelord looked briefly her way before he pulled out his spyglass once more to get a look at the ship's flags. In her eyes, he caught a glimpse of an eagerness that sat ill with him. In his experience, a gleam in the eye before a battle was the mark of a murderer, not a fighting man. Or fighting woman, he amended mentally. Any sensible sort hoping to live, win, and collect a purse afterward had the sense to have his guts curl up inside him when about to wade into a clash of swords, knives, and pistols. Through the spyglass, he saw something that he was not sure how to take. On the one hand, the Acardian ship had raised the black flag emblazoned with a white Z, the simple sigil Zane had used for years. On the other, it was clearly not the fair trader that had left Marker's Point some months ago. Rangelord had seen it and marked it well, and this was not that vessel, unless his eyes were betraying him.
"Wretched Orson has himself a fleet."
The Frostwatch Symphony had a wide, rounded hull, excellent at hauling cargo for a ship its size. The wide beam and deep draft kept it stable in the water and made for a safe, seaworthy vessel. It also made it slow. It was ideally suited to being caught, and so it was. As the two ships came close, the crew abandoned their posts and grabbed belaying pins. This gave them the appearance of desperate men, determined to die fighting, rather than surrender to the questionable mercies of the pirates of the cheekily named Merciful. The pirate ship sidled up to them without firing a shot, and threw grappling hooks, snaring the Frostwatch Symphony and drawing the two ships together. The Merciful's railings were lined with armed men, bristling to leap the gap and sink their blades into the outnumbered crew of their prey ship. For their part, the men with belaying pins backed away from the rails. When the first dozen or so set boot to deck, the captain sprang their trap.
"Now!"
he shouted in Keshi, a language most of the Cone Blades spoke, whether natively or from having traveled. The large crates on the deck sprung open and cramped, sore, irritable, and well-armed men poured out. Men thundered up the stairs from the holds below. From the Merciful, surprised but undeterred men continued their crossings over to the Symphony. Amid all those men, one woman reached back, pulled two blades from their hidden sheaths, and leapt into the heart of the fray. At first, Soria's bold charge had gained her the advantage of surprise, allowing her to bury her blades in two pirates before they could react. The black lacquer on her blades concealed runes she had carved there herself, leaving only the razor edges gleaming, bare steel. It was crude work by the standards of Vaedrus, but stood her in good stead punching through mail and plate on Tellurac. Blood ran off them like red waterfalls. Freed from his duties keeping one of the crates closed, Rakashi drew forth his half-spear. As coin blades from Kesh, Feru Maru, Acardia, and a dozen other tinier places swarmed the deck of the ship, it was the Takalish warrior who gave men pause. The half-spear was an uncommonly used weapon, worse than either a sword or a spear in the hands of a novice. In the hands of a master, it was versatile and deadly. Rakashi's first swing was with both hands near the pommel, taking advantage of having a longer reach than anyone else in the melee to land the first blow. The leverage of the blow was too much for the cutlass that tried to parry it, and the blade buried itself in the chest of one of Zane's pirates via his collarbone. One of the man's comrades, seeking an opening, tried to make short work of Rakashi, but the Takalish master let go the hilt with one hand and dropped to the deck, ducking beneath the handle half of his weapon and letting the blow land there instead. He tangled his legs between his opponent's feet and tripped him as he regained his own footing. Freeing his blade from the dead pirate, he gutted the stumbling one and moved to look for more opponents. Toward the center of the deck, Zelasan waded among the mercenaries as they formed some semblance of a military line. It was no neat row of troops, but rather an instinctive formation made of men who knew that, so long as you kept your allies to your left and right, you need only worry about what lies before you. The pirates fought well together, though, and had an advantage of numbers. From high above, a shot cracked, splitting the air above the ferocious din of the battle raging on the deck of the Frostwatch Symphony. Tanner's new plaything was guarding against any unwelcome odds he saw his companion facing. The pirates had pistols as well, and shots volleyed between the swaying deck of the ship and the crow's nest high above. Tanner felt safe enough, given what the pistol smith had told him of the accuracy of the thing and his shielding spell in place. His Errol pistol felt easy in his hands. With a good eye and a feel for the roll of the waves, he was mainly hitting his targets. Tanner was a soldier by trade. Seeing a battle from an archer's view was a new experience. He rather liked it.
"Where is he?"
Soria thought angrily, hungrily. Men with blades thrice the length of her dagger were giving her wide berth after seeing half a dozen men dead by her hand, but she was more concerned with searching their faces than engaging them. They were more than obligingly not rushing to cross blades with her, either.
"Zane should be here somewhere. If he did not board, he must still be on his ship."
Soria had thought little enough of the ship's name, had not even really paid attention to it. They were at sea to catch a pirate, and they had. One flying Zane's sigil and everything. That it might not be his own personal ship had not crossed her mind. She assumed that she would see a face quite similar to one she remembered from the mines of Rainsdark, stealing the staff of Galen. Zane's men had firm hold of the area where ships met, but Soria did not let that deter her. She killed two more and kicked a third over the railings, leaving a path to make the leap to the Merciful. A shot reported from just behind her. Soria felt her shield reverberate, and then a shock of pain shoot through her back, but it was fleeting. There was a sting left in its wake, but the pistol shot had not quite pierced her shield.
"Stupid things are worse than arrows. Too fast and too small. Rakashi's half-spear would be easier to stop,"
she groused to herself. She paused just long enough to renew the ether of her shields from her own source, then made the leap across. The eager among the pirate crew had made the crossing already. That left the reluctant, the cautious, and the slow remaining on the Merciful's deck. She scanned what she could see of the ship as the men backed away from her, weapons drawn.
"Where's Zane?"
she demanded loudly in Acardian, hoping the pirate might even hear her himself even if his crew would not reveal him. Unsurprisingly, none spoke up, and she knew most had understood her. Soria had been watching in normal light so that she could identify Denric Zane by her memory of what his twin looked like. She switched to the ether, which let her see all around her, and waited for an opportunity to present itself. She turned slowly, looking at each man and watching him shrink from her. She lurched the opposite direction in a faint and smiled as three men nearly tripped over one another to get out of her way. A quick look over her shoulder and another man hastening to get out of her way made the mistake she was looking for. With a quick snap of her wrist, a dagger flew. The unfortunate man she had picked out instinctively tried to deflect it with his cutlass, but it was aimed to miss high regardless. The dagger sank into the mast he had backed into, a hand's breadth above his head, and the free hand that had thrown it was twisting his sword arm before he could recover. A forearm jammed itself under his chin, forcing his head against the mast, and the blade Soria still held was just brushing his throat.
"Where is Zane?"
Soria snarled, meeting him eye to eye, though her own gaze appeared to look right through him until she shifted back into the light to see him better.
This ain't Zane's ship. I mean, it's Zane's ship, but he don't sail it. We just work for him is all," the frightened man babbled. "Who is captain here, then?"
Soria demanded, addressing the ship at large and not just her captive. Soria heard two clicks. Pistols were uncommon among decent folk, but she had been around enough of the other sort to recognize the sound of the hammer of one being cocked. Slowly she turned her head to see who held them. "I am," replied a man with sun-browned skin and dark, slicked-back hair. He smiled as he spoke with an ease that bespoke confidence and curiosity about the visitor his ship had received. "I think you can stop one shot, but just barely. Two? I think maybe not?" he asked, as if posing the question more theoretically than the two pistols aimed for Soria's head suggested. "We get so few visitors here, it would be a shame to make a habit of putting holes in them, especially pretty visitors." "Who are you?" Soria demanded, trying to keep her accustomed demand out of her tone.
"He may be right. Two might be too much, and I don't relish even one hitting me in the head, shield or no shield."
"I am Rabono Stalyart, captain of the Merciful, proudly sailing under Denric Zane's banner. I am also a man who sees things others do not. Three times I will ask this. Who are you?"
Stalyart responded, bowing his head slightly in introduction, but taking neither his eyes nor the aim of his pistols from her.
"Soria Coinblade," she said,
wondering what he was playing at, and he clearly seemed to be playing. There was something distinctly flippant about his attitude that made her think this Captain Stalyart was not taking her entirely seriously as a threat.
"Ah, a Keshi warrioress, with no family name. Instead, she takes on a false one, like her false hair, false eyes. Without those, who are you?"
Stalyart prodded, chuckling. His men were slowly making their way away from Soria, back to where the captain could offer some protection, real or perceived. Soria released her hold on the pirate she had pinned and freed her second dagger from where it was stuck in the mast before deciding on an answer. The man was useless as a hostage anyway.
"Just Soria then, I suppose. Akkadian by birth, but orphaned in Kesht and raised there. If you are done with distractions, I need to find someone. If Zane isn't here, then maybe you can answer me," Soria said.
She took a deep breath as if to steady her nerves and averted her gaze. Slipping back to ether vision, she checked the source of the Stalyart fellow. His was hale and healthy, stronger than most, enough so that she might have difficulty corralling him with a telekinesis spell. It might be enough for her to spoil his aim, though, should the need arise. The battle still raged aboard the other ship, occupying most of the crews of both ships, and on the Merciful, only the captain appeared to be armed with more than a blade.
"Aha, you claim to be seeking Captain Zane, but it is someone else you are looking for," the pirate captain laughed aloud. "I have your story figured out, I think, but I would hear one detail from you and your reason.
Tell me, in truth, who you really are, and why you seek the twin of Brennus Soloran. Then we may be able to deal.
Soria's eyes widened. You know where he is?
Stalyart nodded.
You could take me to him?
Stalyart cocked his head innocently and shrugged, but said nothing.
I am Juliana Archon, she replied in Cadran. Where is Kyrus Hinterdale?
My terms are these. Win this ship for me and I will take you to him, and grant safe passage back to the mainland if you desire. I think this battle goes badly. You can change that, I think, Stalyart said.
Zane's pirates or root peddlers from the point. Same scum, different pond. But this Stalyart knows where Brennus is.
Deal. Zelisan grunted in exertion as he parried another heavy blow. The fellow he was dueling was one of the few opponents he had ever faced, who had both a reach and a strength advantage on him. The brute had carved up a handful of the Symphony's coin blades before engaging Zell, and was now pressing him as well. The man was not a graceful fighter, but was young and vigorous, making up in ferocity what he lacked in technique. Zelisan could tell that the pirates were losing men, though, and if he kept his current foe at bay long enough, someone would come free to help kill him. Zell was well past the age of caring who got the glory blow to end a fight, or objecting to dishonorable tactics in what had many similarities to a formal duel. In the end, they wanted one another dead, and he was rather indifferent as to how the other fellow met his end, so long as he lived through the battle.
Change of plans! Switch sides!
A high voice bellowed over the clash of swords, screams of the injured, and occasional reports of pistol fire. It spoke Cadran.
Oh, for the love of...
Zelisan blew an exasperated breath, made a feint to draw his opponent's defenses up, and quickly stepped back away from him. Each of the hired blades aboard the Frostwatch Symphony had been given a purple ribbon to tie around his upper arm. In the chaos of battle among the two crews of mongrels, they wanted some way to tell who was on whose side. Zelisan slipped his sword under his own ribbon and cut his away.
Sorry, friend, he apologized to his opponent. Looks like I finish up this one on your side.
The big man appeared unconvinced, but Zelisan gritted his teeth and cut down two unsuspecting former comrades who had not yet realized the betrayal.
Little princess, you vex me sorely at times. You had best hope Rakashi goes along. He likes these little stunts of yours even less than I do.
It was not the first time one of Soria's plots had them changing sides mid-battle, and he knew better than to toss vinegar in her stew.
These are the things that love makes us do. Would I do any less if the quest were for my own beloved?
Rakashi knew the desperate need Soria felt for finding this Kyrus fellow, the twin of her twin's love. She could content herself in Vaedras if she could find contentment in Tellurak. Rakashi had never heard of such a thing happening among the twin-born, but he supposed that the bonds of marriage existed separately in each world. To carry on an affair in such a manner felt unseemly, but he could not rationalize the feeling with any sound reasoning.
This world is not the other world. I taught her that myself.
The crew of the Frostwatch Symphony were traders in death spices. Their employer, Parjek Ranhalamar, was a blight in Rakashi's eyes. The pirates might have been no better, but they were certainly no worse. Rakashi used the flat of his blade where he found it convenient and set about laying into his former associates. He was willing to test the name of the pirate ship and see if there was mercy to be had after the battle. Some among the hired blades might have been worthy of it.
So these three are yours, Stalyart asked, touring the deck of the prize ship he had captured.
Soria, Zelisan, Rakashi, and Tanner stood amid the pirate crew who were rounding up the few survivors who had surrendered, as well as the ship's original crew. The rest of them were largely unhurt, but Tanner was limping. He had read in a storybook once about a pirate who slid down a sail using his dagger to slow his fall. Tanner's ruined blade had cut through the symphony's mainsail as if it had been made of parchment instead of sailcloth.
"Yes, just these three and myself," Soria answered.
"And you, sir, what is your name here?"
Stalyard addressed Rakashi directly.
"I am known as Rakashi Darfandhar,"
Rakashi replied.
"You look older here."
Stalyard laughed.
"I am older. I have not seen you in many years."
He clapped the Takalish warrior on the shoulder.
"The girl should have sent you to negotiate. We could have shared the drink while the rest fought."
"Wait, you know each other?"
Soria asked Rakashi. Rakashi was the only one of the four of them who did not live in Kadrin, and only Tanner had met him on the other side. They knew he was from Safshan, but Vaedran politics were of little concern to them, even should they find themselves on opposite sides of the war between Kadrin and the Magrin Alliance.
"Yes, for many years, though not for many years,"
Rakashi replied cryptically.
"We held a common cause once and aided one another. I feel better now about your plan, since I know whose head to cut off should we be betrayed."
Rakashi smiled at Stalyard, who took the threat in stride, his own smile never faltering.
"Well, this ship is in good enough shape to sail. We can make repairs to the mainsail once we are in calm winds, or when we reach our destination. Someone throw the rest of these coin blades in the water, but not the crew. We will let them sail their own ship," Stalyard ordered.
"Aye,"
objected one of the aforementioned survivors from among the dozens of hired blades who had been brought on board.
"How about some of that mercy? I'll fight for you, work for you, pay a ransom if you put me ashore. Come on."
"Ah, you make a common mistake, I am afraid,"
Stalyard explained.
"I once sailed with Captain Denrig Zane when his ship was the Honest Merchant. Once, when we captured a ship and took its cargo, their captain said, 'You claim to be a merchant? Your ship's name is a lie.'
Zane replied, 'It is the ship whose name is Honest Merchant. My name is Denrig Zane, and I am a pirate. So you see, it is the ship that is merciful, not I. My name is Robono Stalyard, and I am a practical man.'"
Stalyard was merciful enough, though, that he allowed the condemned men to remove any armor or clothing they wished, and he was dropping them in the water along a major trade route. There was a chance they might be rescued before drowning or being eaten.
"Where are we heading?"
Soria asked as they headed back to the Merciful. She had hardened herself to killing long ago, but tried not to be wanton about it. The callousness of the pirates condemning men to the sea with some faint whiff of hope for rescue sat poorly with her. Her die was cast, though, and she had to see how it fell.
"Denku Apa,"
Stalyard replied. He looked Soria over appraisingly. Tall, fierce, driven, and beautiful with her natural green eyes and auburn hair displayed once more.
"I think you will not like it there.